for The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. This is WBAI in New York.
Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays are like clockwork. Well, except for this Thursday. We're going to unclock this Thursday because there's going to be some confirmation hearings about the new Attorney General. Be sure to tune in. There'll be some special broadcasting with WBAI. So I won't be with you tomorrow. However, today, I have in the studio with me one of my associates, Linda Briarty. We're going to continue talking about the art of intimacy. Interesting subject, the art of intimacy, because I started off yesterday, and I'll just do a quick review, talking about three parts of the brain, the human brain. We have a reptilian brain, right? That's the part that we've inherited from a long time ago, tells us how to survive. It's our survival brain. And then we developed a mammalian brain, goes along with all the mammals, turns to certain basic things, included certain hormones, so that we could survive, maybe be a little more successful as hunters in the world. And then we developed this forebrain, this thing in front, called the neocortex. And it is from that neocortex that we become creative, more imaginative, find new ideas. Well, humans, which have not been on this planet a very long time, have started mating. And they started mating and they started forming relationships. And they tried to make up what are the rules of going to be, what are the rules of relationships, what are we going to have, what's our deal? How are we going to get by and be able to figure things out? Well, they figured that the best solution is pairs. You know, like you have in an ark, you get pairs of humans. So they figured two was a good number, and two humans get together, and then they're going to make some kind of a deal, an agreement. It could be, if it's a marriage, they could have a marriage agreement. Thou shalt not, I shalt not, I will never, you will never, with this ring, you know, all that stuff. And then what do you look for? What do you shoot for? Well, for years, people have said, well, okay, here are the things we want. We want mutual trust. We want to be able to trust our partner. We want to trust that we can trust them. They will never betray us. That's one. Number two is we want acceptance. That we want, I want you to accept me, and I will accept you as you are. Number three, empathy. I'm going to care about you outside of myself. I'm going to look at you. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it, so far, friends? Number four, validation. I will validate you. If you say you think that we should paint the living room green, you're very interesting. Sure, we'll paint it green. I'll validate your perceptions. I'll look at whatever you see through your eyes, and I will tell you you're good. And fourth, we'll have a unilateral kind of exposure. We will be able to disclose ourselves to each other. I will tell you all about me, and you will tell me all about you, and we'll do it in such a way that you don't get angry at me, you don't suppress me, you don't repress me. So this is the commonality. Now, be right with you, my friends. So now we're going back to this. So here you are, you're now trying to agree with each other, and this sounds like a very good formula. And I've got to tell you, if you get this in a marriage, it's terrific. If you get to a point in a relationship where you have all these things, mutual trust, acceptance, empathy, validation, and this kind of undisclosed, it's just wonderful. And you say, here we are, it's terrific, we're now having a good relationship, and that's what people shoot for at their best. Now, at their worst, you're hitting each other, beating each other up, yelling at each other, cheating on each other, you know, doing all the other stuff. The stuff that brings you to court, you know? That's at the worst. The stuff that brings you to the divorce table. At your best, you shoot for this other thing. This kind of wonderful bliss, supposedly. Now you have a house, now you watch television, now there are a couple of pitter-patters running around, a couple of cars, and everything's kind of cool. Well, here's the challenge, and here's what we looked into yesterday. We looked at this and we said, that's really good. But is there something better? Do we, of the neocortex masters, can we do better than that? What's missing? I bring Linda Briarty in because Linda Briarty is a therapist who works with people whose primary claim is they're not good enough. They say, I got it, but it's not good. Linda, welcome to the show again.
Thank you.
Oops, I don't hear you.
Thanks, hi.
Hi. The big key to this other level of intimacy, I say, if you're somebody who's just struggled with being beaten up, neglected, ignored, it's nice if you get to a place where there's kindness and dependability. That's nice. But there's another level of it, because once you get to that level, the level of consensus, there are things that you start doing. For example, let's look at emotional Siamese twins. Think about being a Siamese twin fused at the hip. Every single movement one person can make, any single movement a person makes, must be in consideration of the other person's movement. Right? And you have to consider you're going to take them everywhere you go, and they got to take you everywhere they go. And so you've got this hip with this other person on it. And keep in mind, some of the downside of this is if they're not in the mood to do what you want to do, you can't do what you want to do. Because they're your Siamese twin. And then, if they start working out in a gym or something, if they start exercising and getting strong, you're going to be weak. You have to be careful. A lot of couples are like emotional Siamese twins. One couple starts to grow, and the other feels threatened by it. Because balance, mutuality seems to be, keep it at a level. Let's not change it. So people come to you, Linda, with this complaint. I got it, but it's not good enough.
Right. It's not good enough. There's something missing. Often what I hear is that the mate or partner becomes the scapegoat. So the person saying, I would like to do X, Y, and Z and grow and really be myself, but my mate won't let me. He doesn't like it. He doesn't approve of it. It's almost as if the partner becomes an authority figure, and I think that's a trap. I think it's interesting to take that away. The partner's just a person on the journey with you. They're not there to take responsibility for your actions. They're not there to get permission from. And I think it's extremely exciting if they can let you grow and let you be yourself, and you can do the same with them. I think then evolution of the relationship is possible.
But if you have a relationship that's based on consensus,
mm-hmm.
it becomes very difficult to make that change.
Yes.
So here's the deal, my friends. We're saying there are three things. You could have a miserable relationship where you're unhappy. We don't like that. Then you could have a relationship that's stagnant. One where you sit like you feel like you're in this, everything is okay, and it's okay, and I got the kids, and I got the house, but you don't feel like you are happy.
Right.
Happy, not happy. And happy is an interesting word, because what happy is feeling like you are yourself. And what unhappy is when you're not yourself. Now, when you're in a marriage, a relationship, and you've suppressed yourself just to be able to get some kind of consensus, agreement, you don't feel particularly happy.
You also, you don't feel free at that moment either, because the consensus itself is such a restriction. There isn't that sense of, I am going to do this thing, I'm going to stretch my wings, I'm going to be who I really am, because I know my partner loves me. it's not going to threaten that love if I reveal more of who I actually am. I'm not threatened. I don't feel that they will reject me or judge me or abandon me. And you get this sort of huge freedom that I believe is essential for this next level of intimacy. They're almost intertwined, the freedom and the intimacy.
But living in fear of rejection
mm-hmm.
is such a bad thing. I mean, imagining that your partner may reject you. You know, living in fear of rejection, you can never get a guarantee that your partner won't reject you. So what you do is you kind of distort the intimacy. You won't let them know who you really are because you become reluctant because you're afraid they're going to push you away.
Right.
So now what happens is you get into a relationship where you may have been yourself the whole time, but now somebody tells you, but coupling is you negotiate, you give up. In fact, couples therapy very often is people saying to each other, well, it's give and take.
Mm-hmm. It's compromise.
It's compromise. Right. Well, when you compromise, sometimes you give up a part of yourself that is very important. So here's what we want to question. We want to question what is a level of intimacy that is greater than the typical level of intimacy that people strive for, which is that wonderful couple's place. Mutual trust, mutual acceptance, empathy, validation. I mean, those are beautiful things. You got to admit it. But the next level up, I am me. I'm going to show you who I am. And the reason I'm going to show you who I am is because I want to be loved for real. I want you to love me, not for the me that I present to you, that some character that doesn't offend you. I want you to see the me I really am, and I'm going to take that risk. You may not like it. You may get angry at me. You may reject me. You may push me away. But I have no choice anymore because I want to be me in front of you. I want to be loved by you. And I want to be loved for who I am, not for who I'm not. That becomes the level up. Now, when I see people go to that level with themselves first, they do it and they say, I want to be myself. They don't have to bring it to their partner and then do it with their partners. I see life come back. I see passion come back to the relationship.
Well, yes, because this self that we're showing is also in constant transformation and evolution if we allow it to be. So that person that you're with is also changing and growing. So are you. And it can be so exciting when that process is not dampened by status quo or having to be that same person that you were. Right? So you actually can keep that relationship fresh because it's not always going to be exactly that person. There's a new person all the time revealing and expanding, which makes it very, very fresh.
Well, you're trying hard. You're trying hard to try to figure things out. You talk to your partner about things. So everybody thinks, well, what's the big truth I'm going to tell my partner about myself that they may have the most difficulty with? And if you were to project this question and put this question out to a number of people, you know what they'd all say? Oh, you tell them about your real sexual self. They would be afraid that if you told them about your sexual desires and your attractions and what thoughts you have, you would get rejected. And I say that part of it may or may not be true, but there is so much more to a self than that. I don't want to watch television tonight. Right? I want to take a walk. But I just got home and I want you to be here with me, you know? But I want to take a walk. I want to take a walk because I want to feel that. Be outside. Would you like to join me? No, you wouldn't like to join me. I'm going to take that walk. I'll be back. I'll bring you a better person. Is really the idea. There are a lot of things like that that reflect a true self. Somebody else comes in and they can't stand them, the condition of a house, or they can't stand the noise of a house. There are so many things that a person could do to try to make their environment their own, you know, so that it's pleasing to them. But they tolerate the other person. Well, showing who you really are doesn't mean the other person has to bend to be like you. So what's the greatest difficulty that people have, Linda, in trying to step up from who they are, right, from who they're not to who they are in a relationship.
Some of the pitfalls I see are the fear of rejection that you mentioned. That's one. The fear of abandonment is also very, very strong. Almost like if I get better or heal or grow or change, that person's going to leave me. And sometimes that's actually stated by the other person. You know, I don't like what's happening to you. You're getting too powerful, too strong. This is not the person I married. You know, so that actually does happen. There's that point at which I think the relationship is going from symbiosis, right, where it's almost like one person, right, that early bonding stage of the relationship. Then there's a separation individuation phase where the two partners differentiate. And that's a little bit of a struggle. There's anger in there. There's conflict in there. There's separation in there, which is also painful. But I think it's a stage of the maturation of the relationship. You have to let that person go, much like a parent has to let a child go and trust, and that child's going to grow. Same thing happens in a relationship. I love you. Yes, go. Go do that thing. You know, I'm excited. I know you're going to be gone for 3 months, but, you know, go. And then the person can go without guilt and without obligation. And then there's more love.
Well, that's a good theory.
It's just a thought. There could be more
love. It's a good theory. How about this? Keep the other person from growing. Help them stay the way they are. Make a deal with them that they don't change and have a happy life. That's what a lot of people do.
I don't know about the happy life part. Maybe. Hey, if
no,
that's
no,
a happy
you
life.
No, Linda. You see, that's the problem.
Go ahead.
The problem is I refuse to put out anything. Because I know people who are very happy at that level. And happy may be, I'm finally safe for the first time in my life.
That's fantastic.
And when people say to each other, you know, I want to go off for 3 months and travel through Europe. If you can't handle that, you can't handle it. I mean, it may say, no, I'm sorry, you can't. We're going to have to dissolve our relationship.
Or negotiate around that. Right. And that was just one example. But the idea, I think, is the old saying about the bird, and you let it fly a little bit and it comes back. That's just a metaphor, I think, for allowing your partner to grow and to be whoever they are.
What is that? Was that the one about if you love someone, if it's like a bird and they fly off, and if they come back, you have them for sure, and if they don't come back, hunt them down and kill them? Is that the way?
That makes it sound a little possessive. Well, the idea is, let's see. Is the open hand, and I know I've said this on this show before, and it's paradoxical, but the tightest grip is an open hand. You release the clinging and the grasping and the holding on to your mate for dear life out of fear, because the fear can obscure the love. So you check yourself with the fear sometimes.
See, now what happens at
Go
that
ahead.
Point? I think you're right, Linda, I'm sorry. And what happens at that point is when you open your hand, you have an open hand, and what this does is it opens you to yourself. Controlling your partner in a relationship does take away from you your whole need to look at yourself on any level. The idea of losing yourself in a relationship and getting lost in a relationship is exactly what it sounds like. You lose yourself. Some people, before they get in a relationship, are so bored with themselves and unhappy with themselves that they want to lose themselves. Losing yourself in love is a great thing. If the self you're losing is a pain in the butt. So a lot of people I know want to fall in love. They hunt for love, or they hunt for passion, they hunt for sex, they hunt for distraction. They're hunting for it all the time because what they've got is not so hot. Now that's okay, so then you find a partner. And the two of you are hanging out with each other, and you've lost yourself, and it's been replaced with passion and love, dependency. And you have this little clique that you live in, and now you've become more than the you that you were. You've become you two. Well, you double. And that's good. But then that continues for a while. And at some level in that relationship, you start to feel the confidence of being a little stronger.
That is so true. That's what that symbiotic phase is about. Like, I don't want to label it negatively at all, because you are falling in love. So what's happening is you're accessing all this love in your own heart as well. So it's deepening your process as well. So it's a beautiful thing. It's gorgeous. I think what happens is sometimes people outgrow that, because we're in an evolutionary model here. I think we're programmed for growth, We're programmed for more and better and expansion, right? So that sets it off. There's bonding. There's love. It's a reflection. It shows you your own potentials. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Well, you see, and now you, yes. You said a very important thing. You outgrow it, meaning you want to grow past it.
Yes.
You know, I wonder, we were interviewing somebody who was one of the authorities on this, what was this show from Desperate Housewives? So we were interviewing somebody who took a lot of the women who were having affairs out in Long Island as you know, and did some surveys on them. And the idea of it was that it's like they grew to a certain point, and then there they were, they had everything. So they went back to young romances. They went back to trying to find themselves, step out of that thing. They used to step out with alcohol, with drugs, and now it's by having affairs. There's a part of us that is yearning to grow and not get caught in one space. How we do it is what's important. Now, here's what we propose. We propose that the way to grow is not by attaching yourself to something new, but by attaching yourself to something old, which is yourself. If you could attach yourself to your real self and discover that, and uncover that, which is what I think psychotherapy is great for, that's what I think you do, Linda, you help people see who they are, and now you begin to see, oh, wait a minute, you mean there's a me that really likes this. I never thought of myself that way. Now, as a person starts to see themselves as somebody who has a defined sense of themselves, of their own personality, then they could take that to their partner. It's very hard to tell your partner who you are when you don't know who you are. So you go to your partner and you start telling them, here's what I like, here's what I really want. Let's not bicker over a vacation. Here's what I would like. Here's who I am. Here's the way I am. And you got to deal with it. Now, a lot of people say relationships grow out of consensus, out of agreement. I say relationships grow out of conflict. It's where you disagree that the growth is going to take place. It's where the two of you do not see eye to eye that you're about to take a step into a new dimension of loving. It's how you get through it. You don't get through it by getting the person to just agree with you. You don't get through it by having the other person just be okay with who you are. You get through it by showing yourself, being seen, and dealing with the conflict.
Conflict is, I think, essential. I mean, I have some couples who will say they never fight. They don't even have a tiff. They have everything in common. They chat about all the same things, and yet there might be stagnation in the bedroom. They might have a sense of feeling stuck. They might want to move on to a new relationship, right? So the idea here is, wait, if you love yourself and you love that other person, could we make maybe a new assumption that that love is big enough to contain problems, which are inevitable, conflict, which we might see as inevitable, and that that conflict and that working through of it, or even partial working through of it, is going to lead you deeper into your own self through your own fear, and maybe to more understanding of that other person, even as a separate person, and not be threatened by the fact that, oh, he's a separate person. He's got some other ideas. It's okay. It's interesting.
In a way, you've got to be willing to lose, you know.
What do you mean? I think you, I know, but what do you mean?
You've got to be willing to lose it, too. You've got to be willing to say,
yes,
I'd rather have me than we.
Oh, wow. So you take a little bit of a risk with the...
Little bit.
With the old we.
Yeah, sure. I'd rather have, because that we is really a small we. It's really a kind of a, it's a good we, you know, but it's a wee-wee. it's a small one. When you're trying to step up to this bigger we, where you show yourself to the other person, and the other person sees you, and they love you anyway. You know, even if they disagree with you, that's big stuff. That's really, really big stuff. This is Armand DeMille with Linda Briarty at The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM, with you today on Wednesday. We will not be here tomorrow. Special programming by WBAI. We're going to be taking some of your calls. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. We're talking about intimacy, and we're talking about separateness and closeness. People can be whatever they want to be. Listen, I'm okay if you don't talk to your husband, your wife, and you just hang out with them, eat pasta, watch television, have a good time, go to sleep. Fine by me. If you spent your entire life being miserable and unhappy, and you had to barely struggle through the streets, and you finally found someone you could be, fine by me. Or if you found someone who you could build with, and you have a creative relationship, and you both build, and you have nice houses and nice children, and it may not be ideal, but for you, it's as good as you ever hoped you would get, fine by me. Then there's this other level, where you say, can it get better? Even better than this? And you walk and you try to say, what's missing? I've negotiated away a part of myself. How do I find that part of myself? Well, that's fine by me, too. For then, you're reaching to a new level of intimacy that, is kind of sublime. There's kind of a thing about being known in the world. You know, Linda, I always wondered why people come back to see us as therapists. And one of the things I realize that when a person comes to see me for a consultation or see you as a therapist, the thing they're getting is they're being seen for who they are for maybe the very first time. Because what a lot of things happen is, you know, you have a parent, you talk to your parent. If you say to your parent, you know, I'm thinking of moving to California, your mother is thinking, when will I see you? If you say, I'm thinking of taking or joining a certain business, hey, is he going to get hurt? If you're telling your partner you want to go off to school, well, what's going to happen to our income? It's very hard because the other person is always somewhat invested in who you are and your choices. A therapist, ideally, you know, I'm not saying many do this, sees you and says, who is this person? A therapist is a psychodetective. They're there to figure out who you are and somehow reflect it back to you and help you discover that. Now, that may be one of the only people in the world who ever do that in your life, but it's such a valuable experience to be seen. But I think it's unfortunate that it's a therapist who does it. Because once you get the skill of being able to show yourself, once you get the skill of being able to identify who you are, then you get a chance to bring that to a prospective partner. And then you say, all right, I know who I am. I know who I am. Here's who I am. And the person looks at that and says, all right, now I can either take it or not take it. But now you're doing it at a new level of relationships because you're being known. And I think one of the saddest things in the world is to have lived by all the formula, to follow all the rules, and to finally turn around to your partner and say, oh, I thought it was going to work. I'm sorry. I thought it was going to work. We followed all the rules. Getting to know yourself and getting to reflect yourself to your partner, I think that's gigantic. I think it's a wonderful thing. I think it will lead to a different level of being, using the most of our neocortex. We're going to take a short break, my friends, and a little music, and we will be right back with you.
Hey, this is Smokey Robinson, and you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM, New York.
Take the music.
Jem. J-E-M. That's from They, from Finally Woken album. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5. It's your talk station. We're talking about things today, about intimacies that are potential. A potential way of being. You know, there's a potential way of being in the world where you are yourself. It's very difficult. You know, it's very difficult to be yourself at work. For example, a lot of people want to go, they get a job and they want to be themselves at work. But you have to follow rules. And the rules are based on people's experience of what's worked before, and it doesn't allow for too much individuality, so you make a deal. You pay me this amount of money, and I won't be myself for this number of hours. Okay? And then, at the end of that time, I'll go be myself again. Well, that's okay. It's a deal. I'll pay you for 8 hours, and you have 8 hours to be yourself, and then you can sleep for 8 hours. If you're lucky, you get to a kind of a work environment where you could be yourself more than that. That's a nice thing. And then if you're really lucky, you own the work environment, you know, and you just say, this is a work environment about me. But it's not easy to do this in a couple's relationship because you're always negotiating with one other person. It's not easy to do it at home with your parents. It's not easy to do. Sometimes I think people should take some time off. Go to the mountains. I think everybody should be required to spend 1 year alone in their lives. And, you know, I know a lot of people, Linda, who have never spent any time alone, married, and then, you know, with their families, and then in college, and then in dormitories, and then married, and then babies. And then dating again if they get out of the marriage, but never alone. What's it like to be alone? What's it like? Where do you find the self? Some people do it in silent meditation. I was told about a meditation over New Year's Day, New Year's Eve. There was one place downtown that did silence for 4 hours, right up to the stroke of midnight. What a nice idea. Complete silence, right? Not stillness, but silence. And then after midnight, they put on music and they danced. So people were really, you know, just revved up for it. But during that time, during that silence of 4 hours before New Year's Eve, what a precious time to ask yourself, so who am I? So what am I? What did I do? I used to write in my journal every New Year's Eve. I used to have this journal I kept since I was 19 years old. All right, what happens? What happened to me in this past year? I used to think it was important to do it annually so that I could go back over it and see. But a time of reflection. Well, in most relationships nowadays, you don't really get that time for reflection. You get that time for kind of going back, laying back and relaxing. You say, oh, I'm going to go relax. I'll go inside and go to sleep. I'll go take a rest. I'll go take a swim. I'll go get a massage. But that's not that time. We need a time to ask, who am I? So what do people do? They go to therapists. They do. They go to therapists and they say, okay, I got to have a time to do it. Or people do things like massages and rubs and body wraps and acupuncture so that they could be quiet for a period of time. It's a good thing. So we want to talk to you as well, my friends. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're taking your calls. Let's hear about you and relationships and you and how you can and cannot be yourself. What's the issue there? Is it can you be you? Can you not be you? What would you love to step up to do? Let's take a call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand. How are you?
I'm good. Who is this?
My name is Tony from the Bronx.
Hello, Tony.
You know, I think that's critical. Who do you want to be? You know, who do you want to be in a relationship? I've had two long relationships, and they didn't go well, you know, but that's just an experience in my life. I look at it that way. But the turning point for me was when I took responsibility for the problems that I also brought to the relationships. And the turning point for me was when I decided, regardless of who is in front of me, whatever woman is in front of me, who do I want to be to her? And it has nothing to do with who, how she acts, what she does, whether she cheats, whether she lies, whatever. Who am I going to be in response to that?
Well, you that's really important, Tony. You make a very good point there. Being yourself is regardless, not regardless, it regards. But it's you can't just say, well, she's going to get upset by this, she's going to be... You have to take that risk. That's what you're talking about. That's what makes you feel better about yourself.
Well, also in retrospect, you want to know that you gave it your best, you did your best, and you sort of lived your life your way, you know? Like I said, what happened was that I can't really control the other person. And I could live in fear of being, dumped, getting divorced, getting rejected. But to live in that fear is so unproductive and limiting and just scary. So what I've tried to do is to live in what I can control. And the only part that I can control is who I am. And who I choose to be in a relationship is a loving and respectful person to whoever's in my life.
How have you done, Tony, in your new relationship? How does that make it different? It must be hard because some people must walk away from you.
It did. You know, it's funny. It did. At first it happened that way, and it was a little difficult. But then I reminded myself, okay, I can't control that. I can only control me, you know, and it wasn't meant to be, and it didn't work out, no problem. I just need to, you know, you need to just pick yourself up and move on to the next relationship. And you know, and eventually, and actually it goes back to my point, Armand, that I could only control who I am. And in being me, eventually I'm going to find somebody who loves who I am and who I'm showing who I am.
Yes.
Instead of living in fear.
Yeah, I got
And I've done that, and I've actually met somebody really, really amazing in my life right now.
So tell me about that relationship. What's the really, really amazing person like? What's the difference?
The difference I find is you mentioned before intimacy. Like if you asked me 5 years ago, if I close my eyes and I imagine, you know, love, what I imagined was me giving love to always to other people, other women, right? But I realized one day that was kind of like out of fear. Like I never opened up and gave intimacy. And it's interesting you talking about that now, because what I find is that it's so much scarier to be intimate, to open yourself up and to give of yourself. And to just be who you are. And I find that in doing that, it's created an incredible, like a chain effect, a domino effect in her. By me being who I am, being honest, being truthful and open, it allowed her the space to be also humble. I mean, humble and even when I'm scared, telling her I'm scared. You know, and what that's created for me is the space for her to be the same. And it's like a domino effect, you know. We just keep opening up further and further and getting closer and closer. And I don't know where it's going to land. I don't know where it's going to end. But you know what? At least I'm controlling what I could control. And I'm not waiting for the shoe to drop off, the other shoe to drop off. And regardless of what happened, that's really the only part that I can control. And it's given me an incredible amount of freedom and power. In this area, you know?
Well, Tony, that's good use of the neocortex. Let me tell you, you've certainly made good use of that part of your brain. That's really wonderful. Well, I thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in. 212, you know, that's really great. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Armand. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Can you turn down your radio, please, all the way?
I'm going to. Okay. All right, my question, what I'm wondering about is it necessary for both people in the relationship to be participating or understand the same concepts? And in other words, and how do you know sometimes the difference between, let's say, avoidance and growth, or, you know, those kind of nuances? Or
well, the second question I'll take. Could you turn down your radio off completely?
Cause yeah, it's I know not I, on here.
Oh, it's not. Okay, I got it back.
I'm sorry?
That's all right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I've got to do this comparison, and I hope you don't mind me going to it, but it's like an orgasm, okay? There is a much like sex and orgasm. Two people can have sex, and one can have an orgasm, and the other doesn't have to have an orgasm, and it still could be a great lovemaking experience. Two people can have a relationship, and one can be truly intimate, and the other doesn't have to be. And it could still be a wonderful experience. It does not take two to be intimate. It takes one. It takes you doing it. Because that's what it's about. Now, if you do it and you don't control your partner's reaction, then you are the one taking the step in. And like Tony from the Bronx says, it's a domino effect. It's an invitation. Here's my truth. Let's hear yours. So that's the first part. What was your second part of that question? Are you there? Oh, I think I lost that call. What was the second part of her question, Linda?
The nuance between what is the nuance between avoidance and growth?
What do you think that meant?
I'm pondering that. I mean, how do we know, I guess, if we're hiding out from growth versus when we're actually growing? I think it goes back to what you were saying about conflict. Right? With avoidance, there's not going to be conflict.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing about anger. Let's talk about anger first. In conflict, I want to do something. I want to be a certain way. You don't want me to be that way. Okay. I understand that. Now, when someone is angry at someone else, they are basically saying, I don't want you to be who you are. Does that mean you shouldn't be angry? No, it doesn't mean you shouldn't be anything. Because expression of anger sometimes gets you to the bottom of what's going on. It's conflict, not anger we're looking for. We're looking to see what the differences are and not to work them out. Not to work them out so that I am going to negotiate away what my true self is. If I have an aesthetic sense of beauty, and you violate that aesthetic sense of beauty in our mutual setting, I'm not going to be too happy with that. And I want you to know, nothing about me is going to be happy with that. I'm going to keep putting the bucket back in your room. So I hope that's what you meant. Let's talk about that a little more. 212-209-2900. Sorry, we lost the call. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi.
Hey there. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, good. I forgot what I was going to say. I had a point, and it slipped my mind, but...
Well, welcome to the program, and Happy New Year to you.
But I do know who I am, and I spent a lot of time with other people most of my life, and then I spent a number of years by myself, which was very helpful.
How is it helpful? I mean, spending the years by yourself, you mean... No children, no mates?
No children. I've never had children. Never been married.
Uh-huh.
Had relationships. Came close to marriage a couple of times, but nothing came to fruition. But one of the things that you were saying about being quiet and being with myself that I do is reading. I find when I read, I learn about myself through other people's stories a lot. And... then I also write, and I do what you do. I keep a journal. And it's funny. I feel like I want to start new with me again, because I have had a relationship for the past 4 months, and it's not really going very well. And
Well, what part of yourself is not in the relationship that you currently have?
What part of me is not in it?
What did you bury?
Excuse me?
What did you bury? What's your name, by the way?
Virginia.
Virginia. So where did you send Virginia? What part of Virginia does this relationship...
Virginia went back to sort of an adolescent sort of rebellion behavior, and my adult wise self got buried.
So what would it take to bring that self back to this current relationship? Because I think bad relationships are great.
Do you?
Yeah. Oh, I think they're wonderful. It's one of the great stars of evolution.
Great growing opportunity.
It's such a growing opportunity. There are so many people who come to me and say, should I get a divorce?
Uh-huh.
And I say, don't you dare get a divorce. This is your field day. This is the place. This is the place where you could do your battle. Here's the place where you could learn about yourself. You've got it all in front of you. What do you want to do? Go back to square one? Go to a place where you're in a vacuum?
No, I don't want to do that.
So if you have a relationship that you could benefit from by bringing yourself into the relationship, it's very valuable.
Yeah, I do bring it, but it's not welcome.
Well, tell me what is the it that you bring that's not welcome?
Sort of an adult responsibility and...
Could you give me a real example of it?
Yeah, well, there's a substance abuse issue with the person I'm involved with.
Could you be very specific?
Alcoholism.
Okay, and could you say that this person drinks or doesn't drink? Could you
He drinks.
He drinks.
To excess.
To excess, and he drinks a lot.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you see this alcohol stuff and you get really upset with it.
Yeah, I do. And I know I can't change him.
So you're that aware of it. You're aware of not changing.
Yep.
And now, Linda, here's where you step in. I know what Linda does in these cases.
What?
Go ahead, Linda. Here you go.
Oh,
here comes
boy.
The tiger. Watch
here
out.
Here goes. Okay, let's see. I get fear out of the way.
Uh-huh.
I let love itself act and speak and be. Oh, Armand.
Show me that in
a really
picture.
You really want me to?
Yes.
Okay. If you feel he's suffering and you love him and you're suffering, what is it that you would like to do?
I feel like I need to step away and sort of tell him that I can't watch the pain of it.
Okay.
I can't fix it. I'm not the cause of it. And I wish he would want to take care of himself and stop doing it, but I can't make that happen, and I know I can't.
Is that avoidance or is that growth?
For me, it would be growth to really step away from it.
And it's stepping away from it rather than going to him and saying, look, here it is. Can you get off that couch and come with me? I'm going to bring you to an AA program, and you're going to sit in this AA meeting, and I'm going to stand outside. This is what I want for you because I don't think you're going to make it the way you are, and I don't want to lose you. Have you taken that level of responsibility with him
yet? Yeah, and he's closed. He's closed to it.
He's completely shut down.
Yeah, and he's had other people before me leave him for the same reason.
It's kind of amazing, isn't it? Relationships with alcohol frequently are primary relationships, and you are the mistress.
Yeah, well...
You see, so he's ready to dump you
because
he's got his primary relationship.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, he's married to that.
It's an interesting thing. So there's where you've got to face yourself, and that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're saying it's in here, and you've challenged it, you've looked at it, you've taken it on, and you've said, you know, from the Virginia place, you've said, I can't join you here anymore. I would love to take you along. I'll join the rest of your group of people, and I will leave you too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's sad.
You know, Virginia, the only question I have
is
why it started. Why did the relationship start?
Because I was really lonely.
Yeah.
I was really lonely. And
so a thing that you might learn about yourself is the following.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just going to be good. I'm in my few minutes, and I'm going to give you one of those Armand DeMille sages.
Okay.
A thing that you might learn about yourself is that one of the ways that you've gotten through life is by controlling your environment. The advantage of your books is that you have control over opening them and shutting them and reading them when you want and bringing those people into your life at your own pace.
Right.
Control, therefore, becomes a really good issue.
Yeah.
Therefore, when you're ready to open yourself to a relationship, what you don't know is that you choose dependent personalities.
Yeah.
See, and by choosing somebody who is dependent, you become almost safer that they can't leave you.
Mm-hmm.
The choice must be someone who is a greater risk. Mm-hmm. See, people who are alcoholics are not great risks.
Yeah.
They're very predictable.
Yeah.
So I would say with you that if I were you, I would look at being a little less in control of whatever the relationship is, because even though it sounds like you're out of control completely,
mm-hmm.
it sounds like you're also in it completely.
Mm-hmm.
So your next guy,
mm-hmm.
If it's a guy, is
it's
going to be a different, an interesting different choice.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe see if Tony's got a friend.
Yeah.
Didn't he sound good?
He did.
Didn't Tony sound good? We've got to call Tony and say, Tony, you got a brother for Virginia, right? Or a friend for Virginia.
Yeah, 49 years old, around there.
Yeah.
Be perfect.
Right. Be perfect. Virginia, thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks for talking to me.
Sure.
Thanks.
This is Armand DeMille. Unfortunately, Linda, we've got to be going. The time just fled by, as usual. As I said, we will not be here on Thursday, but we will be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. If you want a copy of today's program, you would call my office at 212-757-4488. A lot of good information about relationships on my website, thepositivemind.com. I will be back with you Tuesday, friends. And in the meantime...
Pacifica News headlines with Mark.